You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Margaret Smithers Crum. Margaret, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Margaret, there's a number of things I want to talk to you about, but let's begin with what's happening in your studio right now. And where are you right now? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Houston, Texas.
And so what's happening in your studio? What are you working on or involved with at the moment?
Well, I've got three exhibitions coming up. I'm in Sculpture Month Houston, which takes place in October. It's a citywide event. We have no longer in use 34, I believe, rice silos here. And sculptural events are happening in each one of those silos, so there's basically 34 solo shows going on, as well as sculpture is being celebrated in other venues around the city, some of the airport centers, City Hall, some of the galleries. And at that same time, I have a solo exhibition and kind of like mini retrospective at the gallery of the person that actually started Sculpture Month Houston. So I have those two kind of imminent events that are happening pretty soon. And then in early 2021 at the Art Museum of Southeast Texas, I also have a solo exhibition that I am working towards. So the works right now in my studio are dealing with mainly the environment, climate change. I'm investigating a lot of what's happening in coastal regions, not just like human displacement because of hurricane, storm surge, what have you, but also what happens to wildlife, forests. So it's multifaceted, and so the work, which is spatial. And I try to use all recycled materials. I rely very heavily on recycled plexiglass and polycarbonate.
And so for the upcoming show, let's talk about some of the imagery there. Before I ask you about some of the genesis of this work, what is the kind of imagery that you're working with now? Or let's talk about maybe one
sure.
piece.
My work tends to be about vast networks in nature, but also, you know, it sometimes can deal with something that is microscopic, and it can deal with something that's cosmically large. But I'm fascinated with a holistic view of how things operate in the natural world. So a lot of my work deals with the ocean. A lot of the work deals with growth systems. And so what I try to do, a lot of the work is circular, and it's composed of many, many individually cut units that I hand cut, and then I fabricate together, and then I paint. Some of it is walls, spatial works, and some of it, you know, hangs from the ceiling or is on the floor. And so, like for this silo show, I'm really capitalizing on the dome and the circular room, so that when, like, I'm using three very large circular pieces. One is about the ocean. The other is about plant networks. It looks like a huge web that's about, I'm going to say, 9 foot in diameter. And then the other is the carbon cycle. The floor piece is a large circular sculptural piece comprised of about 150 handmade plexiglass dodecahedrons, which, you know, is a 12-sided form. That a carbon molecule is basically a dodecahedron. So all of these things investigate the notion of balance, and they reflect on one another because they're made of plexiglass. So these three large works that I'm doing for the silos are meant to be in dialogue with one another, and they inform each other. I know that's a very loose description, and it doesn't give you a concrete idea of exactly what it is, but I can talk more at length, particularly about the ocean piece, but for now,
let's talk a little bit about the ocean piece, but there'll be images in the interview for people to see as well, so they can refer to them, and of course your website. But yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the ocean piece. Tell me a little more. Well, first, before we talk about the ocean piece, tell me a little bit about, I know you lived in some unusual places and you summered in some unusual places that had an effect on your work. So can you first tell me about some of the places that you grew up in and maybe your memories of them and how that impacted your work?
Sure. I'm Canadian, and I'm from a family that is both science and art, and we always wanted to be near water, and our home during the year was on a conservation lake that, you know, you couldn't go out on with a boat or you couldn't swim in, and it was exclusively, you know, for wildlife, and I lived I was at that lake. I mean, like, we literally lived across the road from it, and I lived, you know, and, you know, I experienced that, you know, throughout all of my childhood and teenage years. And then we also had a summer home on a one-acre island that only my family lived on, and it was very, very nurturing for me.
That's amazing. A one-acre island that only your family lived on. You know, that's not only like a teeny island that sort of seems like a caricature of sort of remote vacation. Where was island? What was the name of it?
Well, the name of the island was Wilma Island. My father is Wilma. My mother is Margaret. So it was so that's where the name came from. And the lake was Lake Muskoka. Lake Muskoka is a glacial lake about 100 miles northwest of Toronto. And it's a beautiful lake, and I was never ever out of the view at any time of the water, of light, of wildlife on the lake. And like everyone growing up, you know, we all have angst, and for me, sitting out on those rocks and contemplating my own trajectory as a human being, thinking about, you know, power and powerlessness, it was a place for me to really think about my own life and to contemplate various, you know, issues in the world. And so it was a place that I can't take the water out of my work. I guess that's just, I can't do it. And for me, water isn't just a spiritual, it is not a spiritual nurturing, and it's something we cannot exist without. So I keep coming back to the, you know, to water, to lakes, to rivers. And I also lived on the island of Guam when I got out of college. And again, I taught school on a cliff that overlooked the Pacific Ocean, and I went down frequently with a machete.
So Guam, I don't know much about Guam either. That's also a very unusual place in terms of the fauna there, I would imagine.
I would go down its, you know, beaches and coral reefs, and when the tide was out, I could walk out very far and observe all kinds of sea life. And so all of that experience instilled in me a deep, deep reverence and a feeling of stewardship for the planet. And one of the pivotal things that happened to me that sort of got me into feeling pretty passionately about what is happening to the Earth is I came back to our island in Canada in my 30s. And when I was little, I could look down 20 feet in that water with total crystal clarity. And in my early 30s, it was no longer clear. And I realized that the lake had changed, and it's from pollution, and it deeply saddened me. And I think that was one of the pivotal moments in my life where I felt that art can be so transformative. And I felt, you know, I was looking for some media material in which I could take these feelings and these convictions and give them body. And so that's more or less what started me on that particular trajectory.
And so let's talk a little bit about the that leads us into the work that we were about to discuss on the ocean, which is something we were talking just before we got into where you lived, right? Or on the water. What was the work that you were about to talk about there?
I'll give you an example. I also kind of want to say, some people ask me why I chose to use, recycled plexiglass and polycarbonate. I'm very, one of the things that, of course, disturbs me is all of the plastic in the ocean. So I was looking for something that would look very glass-like, that might look as if it could shatter. But at the same time, as you're looking at this material and it's looking like it's glass, it dawns on you that it's not glass, it's plastic. So I wanted to make a huge ocean piece that when you first look at it, you don't realize that the material is plastic. And then when you look more closely, you realize that the entire piece, the entire ocean piece that I'm making, is all made out of recycled plastic. And the way the piece that I'm talking about that's going into the silos came about is I was looking at a documentary on the way whales round up plankton. And plankton, as we all know, is at the very basis, the bottom of the food chain. And it was fascinating to see this rotary motion of the whales, basically encircling the plankton. And I think creative ideas come from overlays, and at the same time, I was reading about, and we all know, that there's huge islands of plastic now twice the size of Texas in the Pacific Ocean, and there was something about that overlay between the whales rounding up the plankton and the circular motion of this island of plastic. And I came about the idea of creating this center core of plankton that would look like there is a rotary motion of waves and larger sea forms all surrounding this inner plankton. But the plankton, in being rounded up, was obviously going to be harvested. And in the middle, like a crab trap, they're all climbing over each other, trying to escape. And then the final sort of addition that I made to this piece, because my pieces, like all artists, they evolve over sometimes quite a long time. Underneath all of this, I decided to put a clear monofilament net that you would use to obviously cast large nets, obviously to cast fish. And those monofilament nets, fish can't see. In fact, when I was working with it, I oftentimes became entangled with it because it's very hard to see. And the final thing that I was going to do, and I haven't done it yet, is I'm going to go down to the beach and gather up plastic debris. And through the different forms that are in this wall sculpture, there's going to be little bits of plastic debris as well as the entire sculpture is all made out of recycled plastic. And when I have had this in other places on exhibit, I said that the center core is red. When you walk in and you see this piece, there's an intense red reflection on the floor. To me, it evokes an engine, a furnace. It evokes blood. And I wanted something to really catch people's attention, to understand that plankton and the oceans are the absolute engine that drives all existence on the planet. And I wanted something that would kind of jolt the observer. The title of the piece is Code Blue, and that's because for me, the ocean is in a form of pulmonary cardiac arrest, and I wanted people to realize of the dire situation, because I think it's scary. It's so dire.
It is scary, and so now you're living in Houston. That's a very different world. You've grown up in so many places that are so close to that, and of course your work is now completely involved in that. Are you also summering and still going to places that are like that, the way you grew up?
Yes. You know, recently I've been to Costa Rica. I just got back from Spain. I've been to Peru. I've been to Japan. And everywhere I travel, whether it's Europe, I always go to national parks. I try to find out information about the places that I go to. Obviously, when I was in Costa Rica, I went with naturalists. I explored the rainforest. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's pretty much what I try to do when I travel.
So that continues to be part of your research in traveling is going to these places.
Yes.
Well, it's exciting. Yes. I want to wish you well in the upcoming shows. That's pretty thrilling. And I also want to ask what you're reading or researching at the moment.
I'm very interested in biomimicry. And so I read and watch. I don't know if you know who Janine Benyus is. But she sheds a lot of light on how scientists are looking at nature to solve contemporary problems that we're having in the world. So I read that. I'm also reading about any kind of scientific articles that I can find about some of what's happening to our coastal wetlands, both on the Gulf Coast and also on the North Carolina and Virginia coastline, because I'm looking at ghost forests. I'm looking at how communities along the Louisiana coast have literally disappeared. And so I read a lot about anything that I can find that informs me so that I can use it in my practice.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today, Margaret. It's really been a pleasure. I wish you great luck with your shows and your practice. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.